Hi everybody, hope you're having a great day so far. Before you start today's episode, I just want to give you a small reminder to hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you're listening to today's podcast. And also, if you have the time, if you could feel free to leave us a review, that would help us out tremendously. There are some weird podcast algorithms that are out there. Too scientific for me to comprehend or explain, but it would help us out tremendously if you did that. Thanks for listening to the Northern Nerd Podcast. When it comes to sailing, I have very little insight or expertise to offer and really don't know too much terminology when it comes to sailboats and sailing in general. I think the mightiest waves that I've had to encounter have been on Teal Lake in like May one year where it was really windy, but that's really about it. And so sitting down with Jake McCusker and Aaron McDay to talk about their adventure sailing from Hawaii to San Francisco over the course of 21 days was really something unique to listen to, because being up in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, you really hear about like kayaking, fishing, things like that, you know, skiing adventures and all those kinds of things, but you never really hear about sailing that much. And so it was just a really unique opportunity. And when Jake ran into him at the skating party that we held at the Tot Lot and just got to talking about, you know, I saw some posts previously about how he took this journey to Hawaii, and I've never really heard the story before. And so this sailing adventure from Hawaii to San Francisco, there was a lot involved in that journey, and was really just excited to sit down with him and Aaron to learn more about this experience. And I think you guys are gonna have a great time listening to just all that went into it. And so without further ado, let's get into today's episode. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast. Today I'm joined by Jake and Aaron, and they're here to tell us about a little adventure they took on the high seas from from Hawaii to San Francisco. So Jake and Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dalton.
Yeah. Thanks for coming over.
First time on the Northern Nerd.
Yes, and I'm excited to hear you guys' story. So how did this trip all come to be? You said that started in 2020. So how did this trip from Hawaii to San Francisco kind of get into the works?
So my parents, as of, I don't even remember what year, they sold everything they owned and they moved onto a sailboat. And then at a certain point, my dad got a job out in Hawaii, so we sailed the boat out to Hawaii. And then they were there for like a year or two, and then COVID happened and he lost that job. And then his next job opportunity was on the East Coast. So it was a rushed thing to go ahead and get the boat back to California so that they could make that trip out there. So that was how that came to be. And then we needed crew. And so I had just started dating Jake and I was like, hey, do you want to go sail across the blue, the big blue?
And what was your response to that initially?
I was, you know, I was done with college. I came back to Hayward and was working in the area, you know, for the past year, I guess. And kind of had the opportunity with job transition and stuff. But I was down to take a sailing trip. You know, I'd not really a sailor at all. Don't know anything. Hadn't been on a sailboat. And I was looking forward to, you know, maybe being able to do that. So I kind of worked it out with when I was going to, you know, do a job transition here and made it work, you know, to get a whole month off and go do this.
And you definitely looked the part in the videos that I watched. You had a mighty beard, like right from the get-go. It wasn't something that was like, oh, a couple weeks in, let's check in on Jake, and you started to have the massive beard. Like, it was initially from the start, and you had the tropical shirt. You're ready to go.
He was really taking advantage of having just graduated school and like jobless.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the perfect opportunity presented itself, and yeah.
He was down, fortunately.
I chopped it all off partway across the ocean, too.
Yeah, mid-trip.
So all of a sudden, you'll be watching those videos, and I'm like, just took a completely different look. You know?
Hairless.
He'd had it with the beard.
Yeah,
a lot of upkeep.
Some commentary in there. A little footage, I think, of that.
Yeah.
We'll put the links for the episodes that you can watch in the show notes so you guys can check them out as well to kind of see what they're what Aaron and Jake are talking about here. It's fun to watch those and kind of see, yeah, everything kind of unfold there. How did, Jake, I saw that there was quite a few knot lessons you were giving early on. Can you tell us how you learned all these knots, especially this butterfly testicle hitch that seemed to be all the rage?
You know, just over the years, I've, you know, done enough tying, mostly, you know, boats, fishing boats, canoes, transporting them, camping, and you just start to figure out what hitch methods and knots work for certain things, and, cinching things down and snugging things up. So that's just, a series of knots and hitches that I developed, just to kind of tension things down and snug them up, and you can pull them closer together and then kind of lock off that whole system. And I don't think we used that knot exactly, but the Vang on our main broke, right?
Yes.
We started losing hydraulic fluid, and you had to use a similar hitch to tie that down and hold it in place so the boom would stay kind of steady with the sail.
Mm-hmm.
That was towards the end of the trip, though, luckily.
Yeah. And was there a lot of maintenance required to get this ship up and going before you were able to make the trek from Hawaii to San Francisco?
Oh, my God, yeah. So much. Everything. Every time, it's like a huge overhaul that you have to do with very little time. It takes a lot of hands.
Yeah. What was the biggest issue that it had?
There was a ton of leaks on deck. And some leaks will, like, seal themselves up as you get to sailing because they get salt water on deck and then the wood swells and it's not an issue anymore. But some are bigger. And I think on our first, like, sea trial, it was taken out on, like, a day sail before you do a big crossing. Oh, my God. The bed was, like, soaked. so many leaks. So there was, like, a full day of just putting sealant around hatches and ports and all kinds of little stupid stuff. And then also some lines that were almost chafed completely through. So we had to replace a few and things like that. That would have been really big safety issues.
And has your dad navigated trips of this length before, or was this one of the longer ones that he's taken?
Yes. So the trip to Hawaii from San Diego, which is where we're from, he captained that trip. This second trip, James was, you can see in the videos, he was the captain. And that was an intentional choice because the first trip absolutely sucked. It was fine. We navigated fine. It's just one of those things where, like, everything went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my dad was like, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah.
He's like, I want somebody else that does it more and is younger and is more mobile.
Mm-hmm. And what would you guys say the hardest part of being out on the water for that amount of time is? Because how long did this journey take?
21 days?
Yeah, I think it was 21 days exactly.
Yeah.
We hit San Francisco in the afternoon.
Yeah. You might have a different answer than me. I don't know. What do you think was the hardest part?
The hardest part, I think, is that, you know, a sailboat, it's a decent-sized sailboat, so you have a little bit of room to get out and about and do things, but it's still a small space. So you're just confined. And if you kind of, luckily you have, you know, your crew with you to kind of talk to and, you know, have a good time once in a while you're out there. And, you know, I brought a book to read. I might have finished like 2 books on that trip. But I think it helps to get up and moving, you know, do some push-ups. We were doing push-ups on deck and, you know, a little of that just to keep the blood flowing and stuff. But yeah, just I think the confinement a little bit, but it wasn't that bad. You know, I'm sure if we were to have gone through a lot, you know, rougher weather, that would have been the hardest part, probably, to like stay cool and, you know, fight the storm. But luckily we avoided all harsh weather, you know. Mm-hmm. I think we cut east sooner than we wanted to avoid bad weather, kind of up by Japan. I think there's like some hurricane type weather going on, so we cut east through the Pacific High a little bit sooner, so we motored for a couple days. But it was just like calm, sunny, blue, and you could see down in the water, and
just no wind. That was actually like the area where the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is, and you could see like a ton of microplastics in the water. That was a wild experience.
Yeah. And is it pretty, I mean, you guys are able to stay up to date with the weather pretty easily while out on the water?
Yeah. Yeah, we have something called, James has something called an Iridium Go.
Okay.
It's a little device. It's very expensive. And you can do everything through that. You can download weather. You can send messages. You can make emergency phone calls. It's essentially like satellite communication and data, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Have to. You have yes. to have it.
Yeah. That'd feel, I mean, you're already pretty isolated while you're out there, but then having no connection, I feel like, yeah, that'd be pretty scary.
Yep.
And then you guys had a Garmin equipment as
we had like a little as far as Garmins go, it's a big Garmin. It's like one of the big GPSs. Mm-hmm. It's not quite advanced enough for like using it for all of your sailing needs, weather and stuff. It's more, I would say it's more for like land travel, but mm-hmm. it's a really good emergency backup. So
yeah. Well, and Aaron, what would you say was the hardest part about being out there for the 21 days?
There's a lot of hard things about being out there for 21 days. I think confinement not so much is a problem for me, because I think I like the social aspect of it. You're like living in close quarters with a bunch of people you like. Well, hopefully you like them. Mm-hmm. Definitely boredom is hard. Definitely keeping your body moving is hard. It's kind of easy to like, at least for me, I get seasick. It's kind of easy for me to just like curl up and not move, you know? So being physically uncomfortable, I would say, is one. And then there's some fear that I think comes with it. Like in the beginning, you have to kind of, I'm sure Jake would not agree with this because he has a lot less fear, but like when you first get out, you have moments where you're like, really fucking scary. Like, mm-hmm. way out here, you know? And then even you kind of get into the groove of it and it's all good, but
yeah.
Yeah, I thought that at one point, you know, I stopped to question myself. We were like way out there at one point. I sat there thinking, you know, should I feel like this is like ridiculous and crazy just to be like floating out here trying to cross the Pacific? And I was just like, no.
You worked through that pretty quickly. Yeah. The answer to that is no. Nope. We're all right.
I feel like that's the conversation you have with yourself on everything. Should I be afraid right now? Nah.
Now we'll make
crazy,
it.
But, you know, no, it's not scary or not that ridiculous, is it? No.
Yeah. That's how you make it through. That's how you do it.
It is.
I mean, it's like once you're out there, it's like you're out there anyway, so it's, you might as well not stop and panic or anything.
Right. Yeah. Might as well continue through and, press forward.
But it feels very natural to take a moment and be like, what the hell? What are we doing?
Right.
Yeah. We've both had experiences like that, kind of like leading trips just in the wilderness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you know, sometimes people that aren't used to taking those kind of trips or, you know, pushing themselves beyond some level of comfort, they lose a little bit of reason with it, you know, where you're doing fine, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere, but all of a sudden somebody starts to panic and they let it get to themselves, you know, and you're like, you know, we're a couple hours from safety, you know, like there's a road, you know, this way, or all we got to do is, you know, like canoe trips I've been on is like, we just got to paddle like a couple lakes and, you know, three or four portages, and there's, you know, that parking lot's over there full of people. You know, and maybe it sucks right now and we've had a long day, but, you know, just stay calm, you know, we'll be good.
Yeah, because I think it's easy for that fear to creep up and all of a sudden have you freaking out about like, oh, well, I'm not normally in this situation, so I should be panicked. But yeah. I think that's when you grow, when you put yourself in those situations and you say like, well, I made it through that and I'm going to make it through this and I'm going to make it through this future thing that I have planned too. So
yes,
it's pretty cool when you can have that where you just go, nope, I'm not scared.
It is.
Being out in the middle of the ocean is a little bit different than,
yeah, you know, yeah.
Like just a touch.
A wilderness trip in like Wisconsin or Minnesota or a hiking trip where there's, you know, other hikers on the trail.
Yeah.
But I think just to consistently do something to get you out there, it kind of gives you a different outlook when you are in a situation like that, that you can like kind of step back and think through, you know, steps of, you know, well, if something did happen, how would we get out of it? You know, I'm like, oh, that's a good enough solution. You know, there's no reason to freak out. It's like there's a safe way out of this if need be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and if something happens, so before the show you were talking about this, but if like something happens, say where you have a medical emergency, what would you do? So can you tell us about what happened while you guys were out on the water and around day six?
Yeah.
So we were trolling some hand lines behind the sailboat, trying to catch some fish, which we did. We had decent fish.
A lot of fish.
Throughout the trip. Off of Hawaii, we had a couple mahi on. We got the one up on the boat, and just, you know, the couple that we had that were thrashing before that was like, oh, this is, you know, somebody could get a hook so easily. A lot of us were like running around the boat barefoot, you know, whatever. And just like, we just got to be careful. And, you know, sure enough, I was the one to get a hook in the leg.
Make sure everyone else is careful.
Yeah, trying to deal with a fish.
The hooks they were using too were two hooks.
Okay.
You know, lashed together so that no matter which way the fish bites, you get a hook. And so there's one in the fish's mouth and one just out there waving around in the wind as this gigantic fish is flopping around on the boat. Yeah. Kind of a bound to happen.
It was, yeah, it's kind of a, I guess, an exciting part of the, you know, we got it on film, and there's four episodes of the trip that the captain made. And, you know, people have had different comments on that part of the video. Some people are like, oh, I couldn't watch. Some people are like, oh, my God, I can't believe that happened to you, you know? Like, what did you do? But luckily, the hook was mostly just under the skin. It kind of looked bad. And, you know, the other guy was, like, yelling at me to, like, oh, I had the gaff, you know, in front of the fish. Mm. And as soon as that hook went in my leg, I like leaned the gaff down kind of like over my other leg. And it was like pointing right at the other guy's head. He was yelling at me. He's like, get that thing out of my face. Get that out of my face.
You know, he's like both hands on the fish, yeah, trying like not to let the fish move. Down,
you know? My leg is like attached to the fish on two different hooks, and the fish is like jerking around.
I'm just trying
to keep the thing from jerking.
And the gaff is
hard.
Bouncing off of the fish. And Ryan, nobody has any idea that there's a hook in his leg except for Jake. Yeah. So Ryan's like, get the fucking thing out of my face. Like, okay, well, that's
let's pump the brakes here. Yeah, there's bigger issues at hand.
So as far as medical things go, Aaron's the most experienced kind of like medical person that was on our crew. Just with, trips and training that she's done.
Okay.
Luckily, I kind of, you know, I've done a lot of fishing in my day and know how to get a hook out. A doctor would have done it this way, I don't know. But
up for debate.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that the point is buried down there somewhere. And I could kind of see it wanted to come through the other side. So
wanted to.
Yeah, I got the point through my skin. And I couldn't get it through all the way because that barb is so tall on that hook. So I got a fillet knife and cut my skin away to get that barb out the other hole. Pinched the barb down on the hook and then pulled it back through. It didn't come out real easily. I kind of had to jerk it and work it a little bit to get it back out. And
Aaron was not watching at this time.
No,
but,
I was.
Oh, you were?
I was,
okay.
I was like picturing all of the damage that was happening inside the hole as he's like,
oh,
yanking it
yeah.
through. But he's like pumping with adrenaline, I'm sure. So he's just like, get it out.
Right. Yeah.
The good thing about it was like it was a through and through hole.
Mm-hmm.
So Aaron took petidine iodine, which I don't know if that's
iodine
accepted.
Yeah, that's it. That's what they teach it. You mix it with water.
Inject it into somebody's leg. But anyways, that's what she
it worked.
Did.
It's called fleshing the wound.
Yeah,
yes.
Until it came out that other hole. You know, so it was kind of like it cleansed the whole wound, and that was probably fine. I got a pretty good head rush out of that iodine.
The pain.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the iodine. Maybe I was just like, whoa, that was traumatic. Whatever.
Yeah, stress coming down from response, that a little
yeah.
bit too. Yeah.
He was like, I think I'm allergic to iodine. I'm like, no.
You had a hole in your yeah. leg. I think it might be that.
Yeah, I think it might be the pain that you just felt.
So what, we cleaned it up, flushed it, and bandaged it up. And then we had antibiotics on board, like a couple different kinds of antibiotics. Boy, I can't remember the exact.
I know, I never remember.
I took. Antibiotics, but just to be safe, because we still had, you know, 15 days left out on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a lot of time for an infection to set in.
Yeah,
I was fine anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that was a traumatic fishing experience. But what were some of your guys' favorite fishing experiences, or do you have a favorite fishing story that transpired out on the water?
That fish.
I don't know. That fish was great.
It tasted good.
That fish made
sushi.
All right.
Yeah.
That was good.
Amazing.
Well, that's
sushi.
Good.
Yeah.
That's a silver lining there.
Because the other fish we got a bunch of tuna, and we got maybe a sailfish / what did you say?
A short-billed spearfish.
Okay.
Yeah. And
which
that tasted
maybe frowned upon to keep those.
Yeah, we don't know. Mixed reviews, but mm-hmm. that tasted like butt.
So you don't want to keep it.
Well, we did keep it. We,
yeah.
Yeah, but.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend
it. No, what made it good, though, was soaking it in citrus and beer and peppers, onions, and pineapple, I think.
There's a recipe in the
overnight,
video.
Oh, okay.
You know, just soak it in that.
A little marinade.
I think it was overnight, wasn't it? Or was it just like an afternoon?
I think it was just an afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then put it on the grill.
Mm-hmm.
And that made it pretty good, actually.
It was passable. It was good. I wouldn't choose it.
Okay.
Yeah. The mahi was much better.
Yeah. Did you guys have was that your guys' favorite meal while you were out on the water, or is there other things that you guys were able to cook too that you enjoyed?
Well, we did eat a lot of fish, but James made crepes for us a couple times, and that was awesome. I would never make crepes at home. That was mm-hmm. such a treat. With sugar and lime.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good.
That was really good. We should try that again to see if it's as good in the comfort of home.
Yeah, on land versus out on the water.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
We ate pretty good, though.
No, we did. We prepped a bunch of food in advance.
It wasn't
to
just like ramen noodles the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We didn't cold soak our oatmeal. We actually had hot water.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, you have. That's the nice thing about a big sailboat. Like, you have a lot of luxuries.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, it's uncomfortable in a lot of ways, but you do have a lot of, like, the comforts of home with you, so
mm-hmm.
that's pretty nice.
And did you guys have problems with like your refrigeration at all while out on the water?
Yes.
And so that's just kind of like, I don't know, you got to think on the fly on how to solve the problems, right? You got to be pretty quick thinkers when it comes to problems like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was her dad and James, the captain, with the most, you know, sailing and fixing experience as far as stuff on boats.
Troubleshooting.
But it still, you know, it took them a while for some, on some of the issues we had to figure out what was going on. And I think it was just a water intake issue going like out the port.
You know, yeah.
Some days I think we're traveling too fast, so the pump and healed suck over enough water in or something.
Well, there's a pump that pulls cooling water in and then spits it out, and I think dependent on which side we were healed over on,
yeah,
it would cause either suction in the wrong side or something that just it overloaded it and it would just the breaker would flip off. So
okay.
And it just wouldn't stay on. So it was a lot of troubleshooting. I don't remember what we ended up resolving from that, but
well, he kept having to prime the pump
water, yeah.
I think just to get it turned on, and then yeah, it would like run as much as it could, mm-hmm, with, you know, taking in water through the port.
Yeah.
We're not
no, he's trying to piece it together. No, it's okay.
Like,
yeah.
Fucking know it all.
You convinced me. I feel like I could do it now.
The same thing happened on the trip there, though, and it was the same thing. It was just tons of troubleshooting, and you're like in the belly, mm-hmm, of the boat when the water's moving you around, and you're seasick. It's horrible. It's not a fun place to be working, but. Fortunately, it got fixed because we were like, are we going to have to like cook all of this food in one day and then
yeah,
eat literally noodles for the rest of the trip?
Yeah.
Jellyfish got clogged in the refrigeration port.
Ooh, that would be an interesting experience getting that out.
I think that was in the sea strainer, not the refrigeration port. That's not even a real part.
Now you're just making stuff up. Can you guys talk about the oven a little bit? Because that was something that I guess I've never seen. I mean, I haven't spent too much time in a boat, especially like to that size. But it was interesting how, I don't know, to go along with the waves that your guys' oven had to go back and forth and not just be stationary.
Yeah.
It's like a self-leveling, very common on like cruising sailboats.
Yeah.
A lot of boats have them.
Yeah. They're just kind of hanging, mm-hmm, in there from the top. And I don't know if
they
it's weighted.
They swivel and
but
stay upright with the, you know, direction the boat is keeled. And mm-hmm,
keeps everything level. Yeah. For the most part.
Okay.
It does have limitations. I think I would imagine on smaller boats that rock faster.
Mm-hmm.
Like the boat's big, you know, so it's. I feel like the gimbal can kind of keep up with that slower motion a little better, but it can heel over too far, and then you can have, you know, soup or water, whatever you're boiling, kind of come out and over.
Because you have to lock those in place, right? There's like a...
Yeah, there's like a clamp that, mm-hmm, you put around whatever you're cooking on. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But I was surprised because you made pizza one of the nights. And I was surprised that one just banged back and forth like in there. And then,
I mean, it probably is.
Yeah. But then like you pull it out and I was like, well, it's still circular. It's
yeah,
still like looks like a pizza. It's not
yeah,
just a big heap of stuff. So
it's locks too. So like the oven door just can't just fly open.
Mm-hmm.
But because we cooked brownies or something. We cooked something in there that
brownies,
cooked at an
yeah,
angle. It cooked brownies at an angle in the pan. And that kind of made it difficult to cook because it was like really thick on one side, but it does work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Just kind of have to be aware that things can fly everywhere. So,
yes. So besides the whole fish hook in your leg, was that probably the scariest experience that you had out there? Or are there other experiences where like the weather got a little dicey or things like that?
Not too much. This is like really
not for us, probably.
Yeah.
The last couple days we had really strong winds, and the video, you know, doesn't really show that how big the waves and swells are and how strong the wind actually is. But sitting in, you know, just up on top, we were all sitting there one day, in that heavy wind, and all of a sudden a big swell would come, you know, you're like, we were looking at it, watching it come, and you'd be like, oh, here we go. And all of a sudden you start, the boat picks you up, you know, and you're like holding on, literally holding yourself in your seat, you know. And I felt a couple times the wind and the waves would just come crashing through the cockpit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, a few of those swells, you felt like the boat was almost like 90 degrees, you know, like this is it, you know, we're going over. But that thing is just meant to take that heavy weather, that sailboat. You know, obviously our sails were down, you know.
What? Reef down almost all the way.
Yeah, maybe the jib was out like halfway or something.
Yeah. So it's like you're surfing, right? Like a wave comes on your side and it feels like it's going to roll you. And then the boat just kind of cruises down the side and then picks back up into its track. And
oh my.
It's autopilot, wild. Right? We didn't have to steer much at all.
Yeah, because steering in that is fucking hard.
Which is nice, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't imagine just staying at the wheel the whole time.
Trying to fight that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that'd be difficult.
Yeah.
Just to let the GPS and the sailboat take it.
Yeah, give it a heading. And
you check it once in a while. Like, oh, we're still going the way we're supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah. It's important.
Can you imagine? I remember seeing Ryan. Ryan was one of our crew members, and he was a friend of the captain. And he was in the cockpit. I think he was trying to walk from one side to the other, and we got one of those giant swells, and his feet just went right out from under him, and he was face down in the cockpit, and I was like, oh, shit. He, like, slid to the other side. I'm like,
Ryan!
God, there's doors in here. Jeez.
Yeah.
Something to hold you in. We almost lost Ryan.
Yeah.
The other scary part was, not really for me, I was filming. One of the lines, the halyard or something, went all the way through the pulley at the top of the mast.
I think it was the Lazy Jacks, and they were attached to something important. The jack lines. They got let go of.
The jack line went up and through the top pulley or something.
On a rough day.
Okay.
On a rough day. So the jack lines are like spaced. Is there like one at the end, one like mid sail on the main, and then.
Now I'm trying. I haven't been on a boat in a long time and trying to remember what it even is.
Oh, the terminology and things like that. Yeah.
I'm thinking of the Lazy Jacks that hold the sail on the boom. But I don't know. You keep going. In any case.
Something happened.
The captain had to go in a, what do they call that? The chair they sit in to like lift themselves up the mast. There's a name for it.
Yeah. Okay.
Can't remember. It's basically like a climbing harness, but not as safe.
Yeah, it's just like a little seat.
It's just a chair. Seat,
not
yeah.
Not as
safe as a climbing
harness.
Mm-hmm. And, the you know, mind you, when the boat is like swinging back and forth, the top of the mast is really swinging back and forth. So he gets up to the top and has to reattach everything and re-thread everything. And he was freaking out. He was like, that was fucked up. Like, I came out. I was in the shower when that happened, and I came out, and everyone was like, his adrenaline was through the roof. He was like, that was so scary.
Just at the swinging top of the around. Mast, swinging back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to do something.
Probably like 20 feet, like straight down is the ocean, you know, because the boat would be on the side.
Yeah. And even as someone with a lot of experience, that'll still get you going.
Yeah, he's like a rag doll up there, you know.
Right.
You hang on so tight, and you're trying to do something with your hands. That was messed up.
Yeah. No thanks.
So, yeah, James spent, I don't know if we covered this, but he spent like 6 years on a U.S. sub.
Oh, yeah.
And that was his main, you know, experience out to sea that kind of got him into, you know, the sailing world. And he had previously wrecked his catamaran on an ocean crossing to Hawaii, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was kind of trash. He was, you know, wondering what he was going to do next in life, you know. And just a mutual friend that was at the same harbor as her parents said, hey, we know this captain that just wrecked his boat, maybe you could hire him, you know, to be a crew member or captain the boat all the way to San Francisco. And they were probably like, yeah, that sounds great. The guy that just wrecked his boat.
I know. Let's
hire him. Sure. Here we go. Come along.
Didn't even think about. Well, he had
redemption story.
Yeah. He has this famous YouTube channel, so it wasn't hard to be like, okay, let's see how he operates, you know. And I mean, boat wrecks happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're people's fault. Sometimes they're just nature telling you to get lost. So yeah, that was just an unlucky moment for him. But we did trust him very blindly.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, I'm glad it ended up working out well for you guys.
Yes, me too.
So I guess the inverse of the scariest moments, what were some of the best memories that you guys have from out on the water?
Do you have some at the top of your mind?
I think there was, if you're that kind of person, I guess, to me was going into something where your mind and body are at ease. And that's the one thing you're committed to for a certain period of time. And you can kind of, you know, let the other things in life, the busy parts of life and small things, kind of fade. And you're only focused on, you know, the one thing at hand pretty much. And your experience, I guess, maybe with yourself and with the people that you're with, the time slows down a little bit and you can be more genuine. That's how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of my favorite experience.
Mm-hmm.
Just setting aside that time in life to commit to, you know, this crew, this boat, and, you know, that's our mission. And it wasn't like you had all these things going on in life, you know, that you're worried about and, you know, what's tomorrow going to bring, you know, which we were concerned about that, I guess, but not like you usually would be, I guess, day to day in your normal life at times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's way less stimulus.
It's
way less. You can't really use your phone. You can't really, you just don't have access to things. So it's like just looking at the ocean most of the time, and it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be probably therapeutic in that regard. Very. Of just like, yeah. That's your main focus, is taking care of the things that need to be taken care of on the ship. And then, I don't know, just connecting with one another that's on your crew.
Very. Yeah. Or having an introspective time, you know, to just like, I remember throwing in some headphones and putting on some like super chill music and just, just staring off into nowhere land and just enjoying the hell out of that, you know?
Yeah.
We also had, this was the coolest thing I've ever seen while at sea. Somebody woke us up in the middle of the night, and they were like, we've got dolphins. And the, what do you call that glow in the dark stuff?
Bioluminescence.
So that's like really common out way out in the ocean. Like pretty much every night you can see that just like splashing in the ocean. And we go up to the bow of the boat, because that's where these dolphins are like swimming along with us. And they're glowing in the bioluminescence. Like that was so, it was like watching a fairy CGI thing. Like nobody sees that in real life, you know?
Yeah,
that was so cool.
It's like you're in a Disney movie or something.
Yes, exactly.
Transpiring. Like, should I sing a song? Like, is this just my origin story? What's going on?
Yeah,
here,
exactly. That was incredible.
Yeah,
and I almost was like too tired to really get up and see it. Jake had to put in his contacts.
Dolphins, stay there,
don't go anywhere.
Please.
Yeah.
I get up.
Yeah.
All right, fine. I'll get up.
Yeah.
It was cool, though.
It was definitely so cool.
Something to be able to say that you saw.
Yeah.
You know, dolphins just jumping off the bow, glowing dolphins.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw a lot of dolphins. We saw whales and stuff, but that was by far, that blew everything out of the water.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'll never, ever forget that. I wish we had photos. Nobody had any cam. Well, yeah. Ryan might have taken some footage, but we never saw it.
Yeah,
it's in a vault somewhere.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how it is. You're like, oh yeah, I'll send it. Everything.
Yeah. Never see it again. He's like, I'm tucking this one away.
It's only the most magical moment in my life. It's fine.
Yeah. No big deal.
Yep.
So would you say, what would you guys say, like, the biggest life lessons you guys took away from, like, a trip like this?
I don't. This trip was so easy that I don't think I had anything super obvious.
And yeah. That sounds dumb, nothing like glowing in the sky. Like, or...
the harder things are, then the more you know, you learn. But the first trip that I would say this lesson still translated was taking all that time to cross the ocean, right? Okay, so the first time was to Hawaii. 20 days at sea, lots of bad weather, lots of things going wrong, really stressful trip. And then you get there and you get on a plane and you travel that same exact distance in a couple of hours. And I was just looking down at the ocean. You know, you can see boats down there while you're in the sky. And I was absolutely baffled at the difference and the value of taking your time on something like that. Like, that the journey, actually, I know that's like really cliche, the journey is what matters. Mm-hmm. But it really is very impactful, whereas a plane ride, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I don't know. Life lessons from that.
I mean, you kind of touched on it earlier in your
previous
answer.
I know we all had that, the day where we put message in that rum bottle.
You guys sent a message in a bottle?
Yeah.
You have to.
We did, but it went all wrong. It completely went
what
wrong.
What was the was it the message that you wrote, or what happened?
Well, we think, you know, we read our messages on camera, put them in the bottle, and then, like, threw it overboard. And we think the bottle sank because it was too heavy, you know?
It just made it hilarious.
A floating bottle gets found with your messages in it.
Yeah, let alone us, one that's at the bottom.
That was too funny. We were like, we put so much thought into that. Gone.
Immediately.
immediately sinks.
Yeah.
But.
And what was your guys' what would you guys say would be your message to somebody that would be looking to do something similar? Or it doesn't have to be like across the ocean kind of trip, but something where you're doing something out of your comfort zone. What would you guys say to those people?
It's something that you kind of have to want to do, but it can be a learned thing, you know, and it might depend on the experiences or people around you that are kind of nudging you to go ahead and, like, you know, take the leap or take the trip or something. But I think you have to envision the outcome, you know, of doing something like that. You know, don't just say, oh, that sounds ridiculous and hard. Mm-hmm. But I think to maybe even, like, meditate on, you know, something that it's kind of like off to the side, like, oh, that'd be cool to do someday. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're not sure if you actually want to go and do it. But to keep yourself open to the opportunity, and maybe even meditate on, you know, what would the outcomes possibly be for me? You know, you don't know something that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you don't know what the outcomes are going to be, but maybe you can envision them to an extent, mm-hmm. you know, and say, you know, maybe there's something that I'll gain from doing that I'm just missing, you know, or not thinking of, but I won't ever know until I do it. But that goes for, you know, a sailing trip or, you know, whatever trip or journey it is for you that is kind of sitting there on the side. And you're like, oh, that'd be cool to do someday. But you're not sure if you're actually ever going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it is, you know, the friendship, you know, Erin and I guess, you know, met working. She ended up living in Hayward. And, you know, we got along really well and started going out. And I think just being good to people and, you know, wanting the best for people and being genuine with people and kind of in a selflessly, you know, and you kind of give your time and you never know what might develop from the relationships that you make with people. And sometimes it'll be life changing. You know, I'm not going to say the sailing trip was like life changing for me, but it's something that I would, you know, I'm just like, I'm glad I experienced that. A lot of people would like never step foot on a sailboat in their life. You know, maybe sail across Shawamigan Bay with their buddies.
Right. Yeah.
At the most. But I think it'd be cool to do another trip sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you guys. Yeah. If you guys would ever do something like this again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I would.
My advice to somebody is way different than his.
What's it?
It's about the adventure.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thing for me is it about the adventure?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, take the road less traveled if you take a road at all.
Yeah. Sometimes you take the sea. Yeah.
Go through the woods instead of the road, you know?
Yeah.
And see where I end up. Always wanting to see what's around the next bend or the next corner.
That is definitely how you live your life. What's around the next corner?
I have a story from high school. I'm not sure if Jake told you this yet or not. Remember when we were going to Hunt Hill, like for ERC?
Yeah.
And we were all going after practice. This was like spring. We were all kind of riding separately than the group that already went with Mr. Russell to Hunt Hill. And we stopped by Subway. And Mr. Russell had printed off the directions, and Jake had them. And he crumples them up as soon as we step into Subway. He's like, yeah, we won't be needing those.
Oh, my God.
And we get going on the drive, and Mark Hansen's driving. And he's like, so, Jake, where do we turn? And you go, I don't know. I've never seen him so mad before in my life.
Mark?
Yeah, because I think this... Yeah, well, because
me and Mark had good times, though.
And
that's so classic Jake.
Yeah, and the thing was, like, we were in like a dead zone, so nobody could pull it up on like their GPS or anything like that. So it was like, I guess we'll just keep going, and we made it there eventually. But yeah, that was just kind of one of those adventures, and
make it more adventurous.
Yes, for sure.
That is a unique thing about Jake. He's like, map? What map? I don't need this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love maps.
Well, yeah, you like maps, but you don't like directions because you can't connect with directions. Directions are like orders, and you're like,
okay, all right.
I don't know that. Yeah, like I got a map right here.
Yeah.
Oh shit, this is a dead end.
Let me go to my second map.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm pulling it up on my phone.
Yeah. So, how would you say, Aaron, your response is different from Jake's in that regard?
Oh yeah. No, I'm just laughing when I was listening to him because he puts so much thought into what he does. And I'm extremely impulsive. I'm just like, we're both opportunists, but way different in how we approach things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, oh, cool opportunity. Yeah, let's go. Like, no, not a whole lot of thought goes into it. And then I'm like, I'll just deal with what comes up as it comes, whether that be obstacles or anxieties or whatever. And so my advice is, if anybody's thinking about it, just do it. Just look for an opportunity and drop everything and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's good advice.
But it's advice,
but
nonetheless.
It's my advice.
Yes. So, yeah, where do you guys hope your future travels take you? Are there any places that are on your list that you'd like to go to in the future?
Yeah.
Like whether by boat or by plane or however you get there, where are some places you guys want to go to?
You know, I'd go anywhere, I guess, honestly. Like I said, it's about the adventure, but somewhere scenic, you know, not just like, let's go down to
Earl.
San Antonio and spend the week there. You know, I don't know if that'd be all that exciting for me. Maybe I should take my own advice and just do it anyways and see what becomes of it.
Yeah.
See if I learn any life lessons out of it or something, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the wild and scenic places of the world are places that I would always want to travel to. But just to put, you know, my feet on the ground and experience it, in person, you know, go through the backcountry and camp, sit there, meditate, look out at the scenery. And I think it's kind of like humbling. It's to do something like that is like, it makes you feel, it reminds you how small you are, you know, it keeps you modest. And I think, you know, some people need that more than others. Probably the older I get, I think I realize I need that more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like anxious because I'm not getting it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, when's the next, you know, adventure going to be, you know? But yeah, doing that kind of stuff, like I said, it depends on who you are, but some people need it more than others. But to be reminded of how small and almost insignificant you are in such a big world. And I find that by going out into, you know, no man's land or no man's sea or whatever. So I would, you know, we're following our captain on that trip, and he's doing, what is it called, the Great Adventure or something, where he's starting in the Caribbean, going through the Panama Canal, crossing the Pacific.
Side note, he has a new boat now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Traveling to Easter Island, some islands out there in the Pacific.
Yeah.
Headed back east to Chile, going around South America, he's going to Antarctica at some point, all the way up. You know, this is like his life and business, and the boat is his home. And he's got it up on his website. You can, you know, buy a ticket for like 21 days at sea. And, you know, it's just dreaming, you know, like, oh, that'd be cool to do a stretch of it with him, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to just fly down and like meet him at one of his ports and see, you know, just catch up. Oh, and
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love South America. It's like my favorite place in the world. And it'd be a cool way to get back. Side note, Jake is going to Iceland this year, so.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, with Berkey coming up, we could talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's the World Open Ski Race in Iceland.
Okay.
And that's going to be April 15th.
Also coming up here pretty soon, then.
Yeah, yep. I'll have done a couple races between now and then, and just try to stay on the skis a little bit. But that should be a couple other people from Hayward I'm going with. Should be a good experience. We're all skiing on Saturday. I think they're doing, one of them at least is doing the half. Maybe they both are. But
I'm doing the Cordy?
Doing the, you would almost call it a Cordy, right? We're used to calling the half race the Cordy, because that's what it is for Berkey. But, and I'm doing the 50K Classic.
Okay.
So that's up on the big hills of Iceland.
Okay. Yeah.
Should be an adventure.
Yeah.
About a week long.
Okay. We'll be back. And are there other places like within the World Open that you wanna, do you wanna like do all of them eventually? Because I'm not sure how many there are.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
there's
so
a lot.
I've got the World Open
Okay.
You do 10 different ones of the long race, and you get, they send you a gold medal for doing 10 different ones in 10 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
What do you get if you do all of them?
I'd like to do the
more gold medals.
Yes.
One, which is in Ushuaia, way like down at the end of the earth.
It is. It basically is.
Yeah, New Zealand, Australia would be cool. Some of the European ones would be cool. I'd like to go to like Finland and Norway and Sweden. China has one. Japan has one. France, that's on the list. You know, Poland has one.
Yeah.
Estonia has one.
You could basically travel the world.
Yeah, and do a ski race. Yeah.
I mean, it's a good thing to do. And I got into that, you know, just because people around here are into that. Kind of how I am is, you know, if I'm going to commit to something, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I committed to that. I bought the passport book, and I've done the Berkey a couple times. I did the race in Canada once. So I got my stamp for Canada. They give you a little stamp in your passport book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be going to Iceland, so this will be my third one.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to have you back on the show after that, because I'd love to hear about that. Sure. That'll be quite an experience, too.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy too. Like, well, it's nice to go somewhere too and have an experience to do. Like, to go there and to ski rather than, it's nice to visit, but like you'd say, like, I skied this event in Iceland, and have that memory to look back on will be, I think, pretty neat for you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it like connects you to people in a very unique way, as opposed to just like staying in a hotel and, you know, mm-hmm. doing the typical tourist path.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you guys' time and you guys coming on the show to talk about all your travels and adventures and just your journey on the ocean and everything. It was really nice to have you guys on and hear your story.
Sure.
We appreciate it.
Kind of a shortened couple hour version. I don't know how long we've been here, but
yeah.
It's about an hour. Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch the videos if you want the whole story.
Yeah. Again, I'll put the videos in the show notes or the links for the videos so you guys can check those out and follow along Aaron and Jake's adventure. So with that, we'll close out the show. Thanks you guys for coming on.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Thanks
for tuning in to the latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast. Feel free to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to us on Apple Music and Spotify Music so you know when our latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast is coming out. That about does it for us, so continue to be kind to one another, and we'll see you around town.